Thank you, Toronto Maple Leafs. Not for making Matthews captain. I'll talk about that in a second. Thank you for the content. This is the deadest part of the year. Ain't nothing going on. I got, Will Wagner at 10 p.m. at night. And a whole lot of not much else. And then bang, manna from heaven. Thank you. Thank you, Toronto Maple Leafs. Thank you for doing this for me. You kind of made my summer dropping this in here. Perfect timing. Truly perfect timing. I actually want to discuss the timing of this move and why they decided to do it now. But I think that it's all pretty obvious, okay? So the Leafs go into this offseason. They say everything's on the table. And they hint at big moves. And there's this whole discussion about will he, won't he waive his no move clause, Mitch Marner. Could they move another big piece? And then it becomes really apparent that Marner never intended to waive the no move. I don't think they even came remotely close. Don't even think that they breached the subject. The subject with him. Didn't bring it up. No conversation ends up happening. Leafs are running it back. It's same old, same old. Big change is that they bring in Craig Berube, who, yeah, I'm excited about. I think a lot of people are. I think he's going to hopefully bring some added accountability to the Maple Leafs. Again, exactly what that means when you're bringing back the same team. I'm not too sure. But here's why I like the move is adding responsibility to Auston Matthews, the face of the franchise, is not a bad thing. Having him do the media obligations, not a bad thing. Him speaking as the voice of the fan base, not a bad thing. Wearing the letter, being more attached to this franchise, not a bad thing. Good thing. Pretty much everything about this move is positive. Like, I'm stretched to see what the negative is. You've got a guy who is clearly one of the best players in the league. There's just no doubt about that. You can quibble with the playoff resume all you want. He is one of the best players in the National Hockey League. No doubt about it. He's loved in that room. He is, again, the emotional leader of the team. When the Leafs feel like they're at their very best, when is it? It's when Auston Matthews is scoring goals and he's fist pumping and he's looking at the crowd and he's doing the gladiator stuff and the rest of the team is kind of falling in line behind him. And so I think kind of asking that of him is just a natural evolution of this guy's career. I also wonder if he would have been captain from the outset a lot. People are always split on this. Some people think that Tavares always had it in the bag, that this was essentially promised to him as a guy who was signing here as a free agent. Others believe that Matthews cost himself the captaincy when he had his night in Arizona pulling his pants down and showing off to a security guard. But I like the responsibility. I like the fit. And I also think it's good from Tavares' standpoint. The whole stripping thing, I don't remember Dustin Brown's being embarrassing. I didn't even really remember Patrick Marleau's, to be honest, when I was looking at old captains. The most, I would say, quote-unquote embarrassing one was the Joe Thornton, because it did feel like he was being stripped. It didn't feel like a guy who wanted to give up that letter. He is a leader. He liked being the captain. And it did feel like, okay, well, we keep losing. We're punishing you for this. I don't really get the sense that this is a punishment for John Tavares. I don't view this as like, hey, well, we're being accountable. If you're not good, we're going to take the C away from you. It seems as though, well, I'm not going to say it seems. He's clearly consulted on this move. He clearly bought into this move. I think he's the most interesting guy at the podium today when he's talking about it. By the way, we'll air live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet across all platforms here, so we'll have you covered. You don't have to go anywhere. He's by far the most fascinating element of all this, but I think, yeah, it does take some pressure off him. Now he doesn't have to do as many media obligations, and probably more importantly than anything else, you're getting ahead of a move that was going to happen anyways, but not adding it to the pile as he enters free agency and you're asking him to stay at a huge discount. He was never the emotional leader of this team. He was never the vocal leader. He was never the even lead by example leader of this team. They all look to Matthews. So it's the right guy. It's the right time. The only thing that makes it feel a little strange is that it does feel as though it rings a little hollow during an offseason where the vast majority of us feel as though the team should have made more consequential moves than adding Chris Tanev to the blue line and a different backup goaltender. So it feels light in that context. But when you just separate that out of it, all of this makes a lot of sense. Anyways, James Myrtle, senior managing editor of The Athletic, freshly back. You're back to work. You're back to work. And here you go. Here's some content. What's up, buddy? How are we doing?
I'm good. I'm ready to be back to work. You know, August, whatever it is. Yeah. It's time to get to work.
I'm the opposite. I got, you just got back from Europe. I'm leaving next week, actually. So I'm just getting this in, and then I want to disappear, and then I'll be you trying to stumble and forget what the day is when I get back in early September. So let's start with this. What do you think of the timing?
I think the timing is to try and get it out of the system through the media mill as early as they can. Mm-hmm. And you drop it in mid-August, there's going to be a lot less coverage than there would be, you know, let's say, the first week after Labor Day.
How many of your guys are at the cottage right now? They're like, I can't.
We do have two people going down, yeah, so it's okay. Not too bad. Yeah. I feel pretty good about that. But that's like kind of like luck of the draw. It's like who's not on vacation?
Yeah.
You know, I think that they want this to like be played out by the time training camp opens and everyone's not asking Tavares about being stripped. And, you know, the closer they do it to training camp, which is, you know, mid-September, mm-hmm. The more it was going to be a storyline then. And I think they just want to, you know, I see, and you mentioned it even there, the thing where Matthews could have been the captain 5 years ago in 2019, but there was the incident with the security card and the legal issues in that, like that's going to come up too. And I they know that, like they know all this stuff. And so they're like, okay, let's get all that stuff out of there in the middle of August. And it'll be, the fans will be tired of hearing about it by the time training camp rolls around and we can move on and start thinking about our season. Mm. I think that's what the timing's about.
Yeah. So more, I would say, protecting Tavares than anything. I can't imagine anybody still being, you know, upset about the Matthews security guard thing. Do you think he would have been captain? Like, are you on that side of the aisle?
I don't know. I mean, people around the team say that's not what happened, but I don't know if they just want that out there or if
I'm
not 100% sure.
Do you remember that one little piece of video that leaked where it looked as though he was wearing the C?
There was like a little
Zapruder film of Matthews with like a hint of a C right before it happened, and that's the thing that always stuck with me. I remember seeing it and going, yeah, it kind of does look like that. I don't think it's an A.
People were circulating Matthews jerseys with C's on them that were selling at a discount at Winners, so maybe Winners had the inside track there.
Yeah, they did, or they just guessed and they were like, yeah. And I would guess that there's a lot of jersey, if we were doing it that way, where we were like, hey, well, there's jerseys out there that say, I'm not going to go with that one. But yeah, I'm with you. I think the timing is more about Tavares. But what's your understanding then of his level of buy-in here? Because this is going to be the line he really has to walk, is that he's excited for it, that he understands it, that there's no hint of any type of bad blood between he and the Maple Leafs over the coming month here.
No. If anything, I think that this probably lends itself more to him extending and staying, to be honest. Like, I think this is going to be viewed as him doing something for the team. And, you know, he's going to say, you know, that it's, I'm going to be 34 years old next month. And this is, you know, all part of the evolution of a career. And Austin is our leader. And I look forward to playing under him. And I'm sure there's going to be an A that's going to be on Tavares' sweater. And he's still going to be a leader on the team. And Trey Living's going to say all of that. And Tavares has had a long time to process this. You know, I think probably the first time they brought this to him was quite a while ago. Like, it's not something he just found out about a couple days ago. So he's going to be ready. And he's really good at delivering those kind of messages. Like, he's been around a long time. I don't think that the press conference is going to phase him. I think it's a little bit of an ego knock when you lose a captaincy with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know that's something he took a lot of pride in, but it also just makes sense. I mean, it just happens, you know, Father Time is undefeated, to use the old cliche. Like, Tavares just isn't the player he was 5 years ago when he became captain. Austin Matthews is in his prime. It's clearly, as you said off the top, his team. I think this is just a logical move. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's anything about anything insulting to Tavares. And I think if he plays it that way, then I think people will say, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think it's insulting to him at all. You're right. Of course, this is an ego bruising. It's not like he's up there today truly. Like, he'll force some level of enthusiasm for it, which I don't think is going to be genuine. I don't think that he'll be that bothered by it, though. Like, again, you're right. It's just he has to understand this. There is a scenario here where he isn't even on the team a year from now. So, yes, getting ahead of the move is a good one. I agree with you that it does show that he's willing to work with the team for the team, which is good buy-in. Also, it's like he's willing to accept his place in a pecking order, right? Looking forward, being realistic, that's another positive sign when you're talking about a contract extension. The only thing for him that I would be thinking about is, man, if I would have won something here, I'm not losing this letter. And I wonder how he feels in terms of his legacy as the captain here, where it was someone where there was so much fanfare. I don't know if he's thinking about it in the moment, but man, he's a Toronto guy. He came here to win. He came here, he wore the C. It was one of the most exciting moments in my lifetime as a Leaf fan, like straight up was the day he signed. And knowing that John Tavares chose Toronto after all these promised free agents and hometown guys that were actually going to deliver on this, he returns. He has the actual playoff clinching goal where they win their one series. He had a great start to his tenure, but what do you think like is his legacy as captain? Because it just sort of feels like this is capping the era of disappointment, and that's sort of how it'll be remembered. He gave it up because they didn't perform.
Yeah, I think if you compartmentalize it to his time as captain, then yeah, for sure it's disappointing. But yeah. I think the way that he needs to look at it, and the way I think he is looking at it is, his time with the Leafs isn't necessarily over. Like he still has time for his legacy to be something different. And, you know, the decision is different for everyone. You know, Stamkos made the call that he did with Tampa, you know, and it's a little bit of a different situation with him leaving, but like Tavares can change his legacy dramatically by signing a long-term deal with a low cap hit and say, I want to retire a Maple Leaf and I want to take less to do it. And I want to win here. The job's not done. And I think that's a realistic scenario here. So, you know, if that's the way he's looking at it, and that's the way that the Leafs are looking at it, that the legacy's not over, then I think it's an easier pill to swallow.
I think, again, already that him showing grace in handing over this captaincy, him showing that buy-in, and then getting to be a bit more sheltered, where you don't see him as much in the media, because, frankly, Tavares being the first voice you hear for the Leafs, the media obligation part of this, I don't think it was good for him, right? And you don't want to hear from Tavares after crushing losses. You've heard the same thing. Not like all the other guys are so much better. Like, I would say Morgan Riley's probably at the top of the heap. And then, yeah, you know, kind of pick in between who you want. But, yeah, it did always feel a little disingenuous when it was him as the face, when really what you wanted to hear was Austin Matthews, and now you do. So I do like that part of it, but the sliding in the pecking order thing, the buy-in stuff, I think this already kind of starts that path. It charts it for Tavares, the legacy stuff you're talking about, hey, you get a second chance here. You basically get another opportunity to be beloved, and it started with this giving up of the captaincy, and then the next step is going to be, obviously, if you win, but yeah, the other outcome, which is you take that long-term extension or even a shorter one, but on a low cap hit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's not going to be like the Giordano level.
No, he's not playing for a minimum.
You know, it's not Spezza, but...
But if you got John Tavares at $5 million a year, you got to go, somewhere in that range. You're feeling pretty damn good about that.
I mean, I was thinking even lower than that, and just there's term involved and... You know, I know that the NHL is scrutinizing those deals and everything, but I mean, that's what Tampa was looking at doing with Stamkos.
Yeah, man, he said no. With no state tax.
You do the math on it, though. Yeah. You know, like Stamkos gets 4 years at $8 million, I believe, right? Yeah. So $32 million. Like, what's the difference if he gets $32 million over 7 years? You know, it's the same amount of money. Is he really going to get another contract after this when he's 39 that he's worried about? Like, yeah. You know, so like if the money's the same and you can get the cap hit low, I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think that's what, and there's a 35 plus rule on contracts in the NHL, but Tavares and Stamkos both 34. Like this is the year to do it. This is the year to go long. And it's why Chris Tanev, they were able to do the contract that they did with him. And in this case, I think it makes a ton of sense. But again, it's an individual choice for the player if he wants to do that. I just think that if he does do that and gets that cap hit lower than anyone expects it's going to be, you know, a lot lower than five, I think people look at his tenure a lot differently.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard for me to imagine a guy who's still going to put up points this year, who is still going to play center this year, who's still going to be, you know, pretty dominant in the faceoff circle, all these different things, that he's going to accept, you know, that much lower, especially living here as the cap goes up. Like $5 million in Toronto is different than a lot of those other cities. And yeah, maybe he feels like he's got enough money. He's happy. He wants to be here. He wants that legacy. He will go lower. I have even seeing the Domi contract, right? And I know he's a younger player and he's trying to capitalize on a good season and a good situation, but I thought he was going to kind of end up giving back more than he did. And then he didn't really. And so I'm just setting my expectation a little bit lower for what this would actually look like, because it's one thing to dream on it and tell a guy and sell a guy on a vision. It's another thing, like, we know that salaries don't just mean, hey, money in the bank that you have at the end of the day. There is also a respect quotient that comes with it. And so if you're removing the captaincy from him and then you're kind of having this conversation of, we want you to buy in and take no money, it's like, okay, you know, you're starting to trend into the, now I don't feel... I don't feel properly appreciated here.
Well, I mean, what if you look at it this way? Like, you, the first, whatever, 3 years of the contract are the $5 million, but then you have another 2 or 3 years in the contract that are kind of the Giordano Spezza years, where you're, you know, and you combine that together and then the AAV's lower. That's what I'm talking about. So whether or not that happens or not, I think that that has to be what the Leafs are pushing here. And, you know,
do you think they've already sold him out on it?
I suspect that as part of this captaincy change talk, they have said, you know, we're open to an extension.
Yeah.
That's.
I just don't know how you don't put those two things together, right? Like, you approach them and say, here's what we're thinking.
Yeah.
And it has an implication for the future. Like, if the thing is, well, you might not be here next year anyway, he's going, maybe I don't want to be at the media conference then. But if you are saying, hey, this does help us in terms of what we want to do with our plan moving forward and how you fit into it, I just don't know how that's not a part of the pitch for him to lose the captaincy.
100%. And I should say, I'm surprised we haven't mentioned it yet. I mean, you're talking about media obligations and whatever. The other thing that we should say about all this is, like, how much does a captaincy even really mean, really, in the NHL? Like, I think it's become a very symbolic thing mostly, right? So I think that's the other thing too, is it, like, it's not, the weight that comes with it is not as big as sometimes the way that it's talked about.
Yeah, that's fair. I would just say that the symbolic nature of it would matter probably more to just about anybody in the league, like, you know, John Tavares. Like, if you were going to pick, hey, what is being the captain of the Maple Leaf? Probably the guy who came here to wear the letter, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, in terms of on-ice performance, too, like, if fans are looking at this and, like, what does this mean? Like, I don't know that it's going to have that big of an impact. I think it makes sense. I think it was time. And I think for management, this is, like, one button. They weren't able to trade one of the core pieces. They weren't able to really dramatically reshape the roster. Changing the coach was a relatively easy move that they could make. And while this is a little bit painful, this is also a relatively easy move you can make and say, hey, look, we made a major change. Even though I don't know that it's not going to majorly change anything, really.
You know what, though? Here's what I do think it changes. You and I have both heard for quite some time that, you know, I think Tavares is a good guy. I don't think that he was revered by his teammates. Like, you bring in a brand new head coach and you're trying to bring in a new message. I do think that the best organizations, they have good top-down communication. And I do think this removes a little bit of awkwardness. Like, Tavares doesn't have to be the guy that now feels compelled to have to try and say something or to try and be somebody in that room that maybe he never was.
Yeah, Tavares being the captain of the Leafs has not, behind closed doors, has not always been the smoothest fit.
Yes.
You know, it's just not what his personality is, you know, and it's not just that, it's the team that he was on. He's got these, like, you know, young superstars coming up, making big money, and it sounds crazy to say because they're not that far apart in age, but it's basically a different, completely different generation of player, different style of player. Tavares is like the, strong, silent type, like the, you know, the way that you talk about Steve Yzerman kind of thing. And the young guys aren't really like that. Like, they're more flashy, and they're, and there's been a really a generational divide in that dressing room.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do respect Tavares, but they're not buddies. Like, they're not hanging out all the time. They're not, I don't know. And as their play on the ice continues to surpass Tavares's, that just makes it even more awkward.
Yeah. And they also gravitated to other vets that came in the room.
Yes. Like, yes. Jake Muzzin was their guy.
Yeah. Marlowe was the guy. Muzzin was a guy. You know, Thornton was a guy. Some of the other accomplished vets were dudes who were hanging out with the young guys, who the young guys were taking cues from, and Tavares never was that.
No, he doesn't. Tavares is not a social butterfly. Like, he doesn't have, like, a big, you know, not everyone's not going over to his house and having a party or not even a party, but even like a get together or spending time. Like, that's just, he's a pretty solitary guy.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be a leader when you're that.
But that's what I'm saying about the actual meaningful change to me in the room. The part that actually does matter is, hey, you don't have to, if you're his teammates, you don't have to pretend, you know, you don't have to force it. And now just the pecking order is where it should have been probably for the last couple of seasons at least. I don't deny that there was a point in time where he should have been the guy. I'm glad for him that he got to wear it. It's a great honor. And even if it is mostly symbolic now, like, in my lifetime, I've basically seen three captains of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, I've seen Matt Sundin, I saw Dion Phaneuf, and I saw John Tavares. Like, that should mean something to him. Like, hey, this one isn't just doled out. This is an organization that's very comfortable, been going times without being a captain. And frankly, the only reason that you got jumped on the board here, the only reason that they are moving off of you, is because they're going to hand it to the guy who's probably going to finish his career as the greatest Leaf of all time, depending on how you're going to feel about, you know, the cups in a parody era. But either way, yeah, I think that is the tangible effect to me, is that it's got to make things feel a little bit better. And I just, again, I know how it feels in any organization that you're in when you kind of know who's in charge and you know who to look to, and you don't have to satiate someone's ego when they're not really a leader. So I do think that'll matter. So to you then, what do you think is the biggest impact of the change?
The thing that I think is the biggest positive, if you're looking at this just from like a really macro perspective, if we're zooming out, is that I think it's something that Matthews really wanted.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something he's going to really cherish. And depending on how this season and the next season goes, I mean, you want him feeling as invested in as possible in the mission and in being here. Like, you don't want, you know, if they have another disappointing season, if the roster changes, if there's turmoil, you know, you want him still feeling like, this is my team and I'm the leader here. And I think this is just I think he already felt like that. I think he already felt invested. He obviously wants to be here. He signed the new contract, but anything you can do to make him feel like he wants to stay here and retire as a Leaf, I think you want to do it. And I think that this is another piece that does that.
100%. That's probably the right answer, is that in doing this move and doing it now, you made it more likely that both your top line centers finish their careers as Maple Leafs.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, ultimately that's probably the greatest outcome. And yeah, again, maybe the media obligation isn't as intense as it used to be. Like, God, it felt like, when I think about the captaincy in terms of media, I don't think of Tavares. I think of Dion, who was getting trotted out there day in, day out, and just getting hammered over and over again, giving these horrible answers. And he clearly learned. I used to cut his audio. It was one of my first jobs in the industry. He clearly learned to have these big pauses in between his answers to make it just like next near impossible to cut him up. And to like, he did not enjoy it. Maybe it's not as bad as that once was, but one thing for Matthews for sure is getting to tell people, you know, he goes to a UFC event and he's with Justin Bieber. He's not just Maple Leafs superstar. It's now captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Austin Matthews. And I think that actually, not like that social effect, but just the weight of what that sounds like in all circumstances in life, when he gets to go to the dressing room and he looks in his locker and he sees a sweater with a C on it with the Toronto Maple Leaf, that it just, that still does mean something to me. This isn't the Arizona Coyotes, the Utah hockey team, right? They didn't name their team Did they name their team? I can't remember if they named their team.
They're not going to name their team this year.
Yeah, but they're going to be the hockey club, but then it's pretty much set in stone that they're going to be the Yeti moving forward after that, which is especially weird that they all kind of know what the name's going to be. Anyway, I think that part of it's going to matter to Matthews.
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, Ian, I don't know if he projects this super well. Like, I hear from some fans, is he the right choice? You know, like, Riley seems like he's, you know, more personable with the media and stuff like that. But that's not really Matthews is there's a real fire that burns with him. And that's why he's like, he wants it all. He wants to win. He wants the captaincy. He wants to win the Hart every year. He wants to win and I know it's a tough sell to fans right now, given the way that the seasons have gone and how disappointing the first round was this year, but that's what he's thinking about. And that's what motivates him. So, and the captaincy is part of that.
I don't get that confused whatsoever. I think he is about as passionate as a player as they come. Like, I don't think that's an issue with Matthews. Like, you see his play. He plays with a lot of passion. He plays with a lot of emotion. And I know that he takes a lot of personal pride in wanting to be, like, the best player in the league.
Yeah, and there's a lot made of... You know, you hear a lot about someone like Sidney Crosby and the way that he trains and the way that he's able to extend his career and how he manages his body. And Matthews is doing all that stuff too. Like, Matthews it's not like he's just a freak of nature with God-given talent the way maybe someone like Phil Kessel was. Like, it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into what he does. And a lot of it's very calculated and, you know, so, and I think that you want that as a captain, right?
For sure.
You want your young players coming in. You want Easton Cowan to come in and look at Matthews being the first guy on the ice and look at his off-season training and be like, holy cow, like, this is, I've never seen anything on this level before. And when you talk to guys that train with Matthews in the summer, that's what they say. It's like, wow, I cannot believe the level that he's at. I mean, JVR, when he was here, he's one of the most meticulous guys in the league. He's got every supplement going, doing every off-ice thing. He's paying all these skills coaches and working with Adam Oates and all this stuff. And I remember talking to him about it. And he's like, I cannot believe what Austin does. Like, it's just, like, unbelievable. And I think that's what you want. I think that's what you want in your leader. You don't need him to be the best media spokesperson in the world anymore. You want him to go into that dressing room and project that. And I think that Matthews is going to do that for sure.
Yeah, the thing is, though, is I actually think he fits the mold with the media stuff, too. Just because he is cool, calm, collected, and he rarely shows frustration. He does have a bit of a sense of humor. Like, you know, nothing really seems to get to him that's minuscule. I think he gets extremely frustrated with the losses, like they all do. But he seems to wear it fairly well, doesn't seem too plugged in on what the day-to-day is, doesn't seem to have a circle around him that's, you know, filling him in on who's saying what and who's doing what. I like, never gotten that impression from the guy. But yeah, from the overall aura of the captaincy, that's the way the kids are saying it these days, the aura. This is a 10 out of 10. He's one of the most skilled guys in the league. He's a compulsive competitor who works his ass off. And you're right. When people are going to show up and now see, like, you're new to the team, you get to the coolest guy on the team is the captain. The most skilled guy on the team is the captain. The hardest worker on the team is the captain. Like, there's no flaw with this decision whatsoever. Like, there just isn't. It is a really good choice.
I mean, there's not a different choice they could have made.
No.
You know,
like, the Morgan Riley stuff. It's like, no, I'm sorry. No, like, that's, and I love Morgan Riley, but yeah, for a guy coming off of a disappointing season, just what? Because he's been here the longest? Like, you were going to overlook Matthews a second time?
No.
You know, like,
no, it's
insane.
Not on the table.
Yeah. Insane. Yeah. Truly, truly, truly insane. Okay. So last thing on this, and we'll keep it. So you think the media obligation part of it is nothing? Like, you're a guy who, you know, manages a news team, trying to get the stuff, and I always thought, like, hey, you know what, this is a something, like, we're going to hear from him more.
You're right that it's a lot less. I mean, the media contingent around the team is a lot smaller. Like, you look at when they're on the road sometimes and there's hardly anyone there. Like, there might be someone with the broadcaster, and, you know, the papers just aren't traveling the way they used to. And so it's not nothing, but I don't know. I think Matthews will be fine with it. I think Tavares was fine with it. Like, I can't recall Tavares saying anything that was like a slip up or caused issues or anything like that. I think Matthews was a bit thrown off by the media when he first came in, but it's been 8 years. Like he's comfortable in that environment now, and he knows the players involved and the kind of questions he's going to have to field. And I don't think that it's going to be that big a deal. I don't think it's not going to weigh on him or anything like that.
Again, I'm not trying to be a jerk in this, but I'll just say that having your leadership be Craig Berube and Austin Matthews versus Sheldon Keefe and John Tavares is pretty clearly an upgrade. As much as you can nitpick with not enough changes in the season, and as you mentioned, like the actual impact of this, you can question, but just that those two things side by side, I'm not getting the feeling of like that's the Spider-Man meme or it's the same picture meme. Like that's a different thing. Anyways, one last thing before you go is I got to get your thoughts on the Oilers offer sheet. It's incredible when it happens to them because all it does is invoke the war of words between Kevin Lowe and Brian Burke, which is
Rent a Barn.
Dude, it's insane looking back at some of this. Do you want to, like, Kevin Lowe was on the national TV going, do you want to count the rings? He won one ring, like, disparaging him, saying that he hated being even affiliated, like, that they shared the same position or that his, no, the quote was something along the lines of, he hated that he gave Penner that offer sheet because now their names were linked. He's like, now, and obviously Berkey was on fire the entire time, furious about it. But yeah, how does this actually play out for the Oilers? Because they were already in a pretty tricky cap situation. And yeah, I think that these are two really important pieces for them moving forward that now they're going to have to pay more than they expected. Did they screw this up? Should they have gotten these deals done earlier? Did they misread the market? Is this something that we're going to see more often? Like, I think the last one that happened was Kotkaniemi, right? Like, is this becoming... The weird feeling I had watching this all transpire is how stark a difference this feels to the last time the Oilers were involved in an offer sheet.
I think in the last... I think it's 11 years, there's only been two, right?
Right.
So, I mean, people can say the Oilers screwed up, but, like, they just didn't think it would happen, right? Like, it's such a... there's no real threat there. Like, no one is worried about these because they never happen. I think it's great. I mean, yeah. I think this should happen way more. I mean, I went and quickly looked at the list of other RFAs who are out there. Like, this should be happening way more. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Swayman still needs a contract and Sider in Detroit. And there's a bunch of them. Like, why isn't this happening all the time?
Well, especially with Swayman.
Yeah. Yeah. But especially targeting a team like Edmonton that is so close to the cap. You know, and everyone was lauding them for the free agency that they had and bringing in the pieces that they did and like, oh, you know, they'll figure out that the cap stuff later. Mm-hmm. But especially in the case. Yeah. I mean, they did have a good offseason, but especially in the case of Broberg, I mean, he's a player that's been mismanaged there, you know, a high pick. I think was he eighth overall? I think like he was a high pick for them. They don't have a lot of young talent coming. He's better than some of the guys they've got on the blue line, I think already, or is going to be in short order. And I think, you asked what's going to happen here. I think what's going to happen is they're going to lose one of these guys, and it feels like they're probably going to lose Broberg. And, but again, I have a hard time really crushing Edmonton for it because how are they to expect that this was going to happen? And I hope that it's a signal to other teams that, hey, this is another way to acquire talent, and you're only going to have to give up a second-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
It's a no-brainer for St. Louis. It's an awesome move. And this is why I'm wondering if it will actually finally cause a little change with the RFA approach. Again, last time this happened, I think, was Kotkaniemi, right?
Yeah, it was Kotkaniemi in response to the Sebastian Aho, and those are the only two that have happened,
right.
I think, in the last 11 years.
But remember how volatile it also felt between those two organizations when that happened.
Yes.
And
yes.
The Oilers are a team that's trying to win a Stanley Cup. Their fan base is obviously frustrated. You said it, like, you can't be too angry with them for doing this because it's really not how business is conducted. But the overall feeling I've gotten from this is not the same outrage. It's been, wow, what a smart move, what a calculated move, more celebratory of St. Louis than, wow, what a scummy move. And even with, like, the Kotkaniemi one where he walks, people were going, well, Kotkaniemi, like, is that really the right player to be investing in? These are the right guys at the right price to the right organization taking advantage of the right organization. I would just feel if you're in management, and I know there's the boys club that they have and that this obviously is in violation of that. And I'm sure there will be some repercussions, but it's also like a pretty damn well-respected front office, right? Like this is among the league leaders. So for them to do it, I just like, if they're doing this to Edmonton, I don't know what your excuse would be as another organization that wouldn't be trying to take advantage of similar situations in the future.
Like, you're right that they're targeting exactly the right players. I mean, get those players, you know, up to, was it $4.5 million, something like
Dude,
that?
Look at what second round picks go for now at the deadline. Yes. Like the idea of you getting Broberg for one is outrageous.
Well, I mean, what are the chances that a second round pick and probably a later second round pick is going to be turned into an NHL player?
Who cares?
Minuscule.
Who cares?
It's like 1% or less.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very, very small. So teams should be doing this all the time. And it should change the landscape for RFAs, and it should put more pressure on teams to get their RFAs signed before July 1, which rate, you know, the last 10 years has been no pressure at all. Teams haven't been worried about that at all.
Yeah.
You know, the Aho Kotkaniemi thing just felt like a weird one-off where the Kotkaniemi part of it was just in retaliation. And the Aho one was never, that
serious.
Wasn't really the, like, they were never going to not match that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are real. If you're going to make an offer sheet, you got to make it calculated and targeted. And they did a really good job. And the interesting thing is, like, I don't think anyone really knows what Broberg's going to be, but if he ends up being a good defenseman, you know, he's only got a 2-year deal, but he's going to be RFA after that 2-year deal's up. He's going to be in your organization for a long period of time. He's barely played in the NHL. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how smart this looks, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I think even if he busts out, as in, like, he doesn't perform well, goes to St. Louis, they take him for that. The cost of acquisition is one where it's always going to be defensible. You're always going to say, like,
cap,
you would do
cap
that.
Cap space, right? Like, you're dedicating a lot of your cap to him. And
sure.
If he can't actually live up to that, then it's kind of like, well.
But they're kind of in a transition period of the franchise, too, where it's like you're sort of looking for these darts right now. So why not do it? It reminds me a little bit, just to contextualize it with, like, this audience, of when the Leafs had Johnsson and Kapanen up as RFAs at the same time. And we were making this case of other teams should be doing this to Leafs. And nobody did, and they got the business tied up pretty quick. And, you know, that didn't age very well because neither of those players became what we thought they were going to be. But, yeah, I did. I already started thinking about this for guys like when Matthew Nyes is up. You go, this feels like that same kind of player that you would want to do this to. And the Leafs are that same kind of team that's up against that cap. Maybe take care of business a little bit earlier just because maybe it is more of a threat moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Nyes makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, and maybe it'll be inflationary for those kind of RFAs to get done earlier.
Yeah. So. I hope it actually ends up being something because it's fun having this kind of transaction in the NHL, and it seems so stupid that you wouldn't do this when when you look at all of it and you step back and look at the picture, you're like, why wouldn't everybody have done this? Like, why was it St. Louis? But the fact, again, that it's Doug Armstrong, it's that organization, and they're going after, you know, a sweetheart of the league in the Edmonton Oilers. I think that maybe, just maybe, this actually is the start of something. Hey, James, it's great to chat with you again, buddy. Thanks for making time today.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Cheers, pal. James Myrtle, senior managing editor at The Athletic. And again, the media presser today, 11 o'clock. I'm going to introduce it here on The Fan. We're going to stick with it, and then I'm going to react after it ends. So stay tuned on The Fan. I'll probably put that up in the Leafs Talk feed, not the J.D. Bunkus podcast, but subscribe to both. Follow the J.D. Bunkus podcast on Apple and on Spotify. You can also get it on sportsnet.ca, but those are the two places where it really helps the show the most just because you end up subscribing in those two spots. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Again, I'll be there all day long today. I'm going to stick around, sit in the studio. Mike and I are going to watch this media conference, going to nitpick everything that they say or do, to some of you's delight, to some of you's frustration. That's the game. You get named the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm going to really pay attention to see how you react to it. And I'm going to talk about it. So that'll be later today. Hopefully McKee comes in for that too. I think we might put that up on a Leafs Talk feed. We'll see. He's a little busy boy. Let's see right here, actually. Yeah, he'll be there. So it's going to be McKee and I. We're going to do a Leafs Talk right after, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Anyways, he's the only American captain of the Leafs. He's the second non-Canadian captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, the only Sundin. He's essentially going to be, for a lot of Leaf fans, you know, the third captain they know, the fourth captain they know. like, yeah, my whole life has essentially been those guys, Sundin, Tavares, Dion, and now it's going to be Austin Matthews. And yeah, this feels more of the Sundin ilk of captain. I think that this is the way people are going to look at his career when it's over, is young kids are going to revere Austin Matthews the way that a guy that's my age reveres Matt Sundin. And yeah, Matt Sundin was cool. Matt Sundin was a great captain. He had an awesome personality. He was a dominant player. He was a big guy. He worked his ass off. And I think that the makings of the best captains are those. It's the guy that's going to do everything the right way, who is also going to bring the room together, and who guys are going to want to fall in line for. And I think that's Austin Matthews. I think that already was Austin Matthews. But yeah, those are the two things. I think that it's easier to communicate the messaging within the dressing room, that it's like, you don't have to try to look to Tavares anymore. You don't have to placate him. Craig Berube as his guy, it's there. You got those two guys at the top. Awesome. Organizationally, that makes sense. But James is right that probably the biggest thing in all of this is that it's buy-in from Tavares and it's excitement from Matthews. And having those two pieces of your organization, which, whatever, we can talk about, like, the ones that need to move and what changes have to happen. And I'm right at the forefront of that. I really strongly believe that they've got to make a change eventually to the current structure of the organization from a player standpoint. But having Tavares on a cheap contract, man, if, like, James is right and you can get him for under five, yeah, you're doing that. And if it's dramatically lower than five, I think that's like an all-time coup for the organization. And if you can get Matthews to feel like this is his franchise, that he doesn't want to go anywhere, that this is the only place that he could ever see himself, walking away from being the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs is not walking away from being the captain of the New York Islanders, no offense. It's all good things. Anyways, follow the show, follow me, take a quick break, hit what we missed, and then, yeah, again, I'll be on after the media conference.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I kind of jinxed the Jays tank. I shouldn't have talked about it. I shouldn't have done my job. I should have called in sick. Just shut up about it. The only thing that really comforts me when it comes to the Jays winning games like this is how much fun the young guys are having and how much more enjoyable this has been to actually watch. And whatever. You think I'm overstating it. It's like, I watch all these games, and I've been saying this over and over and over again, that this was the main reason to do the rebuild throughout the entire season, is that if you want people's attention and you want people to actually want to go to the ballpark and want to watch the games, you got to refresh the product. Give us something new. It's what's going to be kind of awful about this Leaf season is we're going to go like, Berube's there. And then you go like, oh, wait, he doesn't play. Matthews is wearing the C. Ah, he is the same player, though. He's not going to transform into something. And then you're going to go, Chris Tanev. And you're going to go, yeah, it's nice to watch him. Hope he doesn't get hurt. The hope there is that you notice him as little as possible. Sometimes you got to reinvigorate the product. And the Blue Jays, in doing that, and having Will Wagner be the first Blue Jay, first since Davis Schneider, which kind of does diminish it, I'm sorry, a little tiny bit. When I saw the list, I was like, oh. The fifth Jay to have five hits in his first two games. Fun. Seeing Spencer Horowitz go yard, fun. The young guys, it's just like, I don't think that they've got a lot of superstars in the mix here when it comes to the young players that we're watching. We're not looking at another Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but here's the thing. You don't necessarily need that as much because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. seems to have found himself. He's terrifying every single time he's at the dish now. Like, the attitude that he has at the plate is so fun. The team is way more enjoyable. It's just a fact. They are way more enjoyable right now. And so, yeah, do I wish they were tank and do I care if they really win these games? No, but it is offset by the enjoyment that I'm getting out of seeing the team, and they seem like they're all having more fun. But that's because they've got a bunch of guys on the team now who probably didn't think that they were going to be in the big leagues this year, or who, if they did think they were going to be there, which they got opportunities at the beginning of the year, like the Clements and the Schneiders of the world, they thought, hey, maybe it's not going to last as long. Maybe I'm not going to be here for the entire year. Maybe I'm not going to finish the year here, especially on a team that was supposed to compete. Anyway, disappointing season, but this has been a bit of a fun stretch, even though it's costing my tank, my fun tank, which I do enjoy. I like looking at the standings. I'm a sicko for standings at this time of year, and I want to be at the bottom or I want to be at the top. One of the two. I hate being in the middle. Anyway, the other guys on that list, by the way, the five Jays to get five hits in their first two games, which is a bit of a obscure stat. Like, who really cares? Two games. But I like that Danny Ainge is on this list. Danny Ainge, 1979, right away. That's a cool one. I like the pictures of Danny Ainge in the Blue Jays gear. Anyways, all right, Mike Jose, what did we miss?
All right, we're going to talk about your favorite guy again. That's Caleb Williams.
I hate how you can already tell he's good.
I know, he's so fun to watch.
It's just, he's going to be amazing.
Hard Knocks broke yesterday because too many Bears fans were trying to stream it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I'm happy for, I got to tell you something. I've never had anything against Bears fans. Like, I've always been, you know, the Seahawks actually lost a playoff game to them in my lifetime, and I didn't enjoy that. But I've always liked the Bears. Like, I've never had anything against them. I think that their uniforms are pretty ugly. They're, like, in the bottom tier of the league to me. I hate their field, you know? They're not been an enjoyable watch for most of my lifetime, but that's because they've never had a quarterback. And all of a sudden, they have a guy who, in just a couple of preseason plays, with the athleticism and the arm talent, you're like, boy, going to be hard to not see this guy be a super duper star. Like, he clearly looks like he's in the, yeah. When they made all the Mahomes comparisons and then he didn't win at all his games in college, and mostly because his offensive line was horrific, and there were two other teams in his conference that were unreal. Yeah. Anyway, I'm also buying all the hype, but anyways, that's not where you're going with this.
No, but well, kind of, because if you are buying the hype a little bit,
completely.
Yeah, he's basically took on a little mentorship from Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think you're pretty good if Tom Brady looks at you and is like, "Hey, you want to be under my wing?" That's a pretty good sign, I would say.
So he's on the TB12 diet now, but he's only 22 years old. Yeah. We've already talked about the diet. I'm not going to read the how much stuff you basically can't have.
I do not recommend the TB12 diet to 22-year-olds. I'm sorry.
Right? That was my question.
I don't care how healthy it is, whatever. You're 22. You got to live your life a little bit. Like, what's on the list of you can't do on the TB? Here's what my understanding of the TB12 diet is. You can eat avocados.
Yeah, he's just like me.
Can you eat avocados?
Yeah.
Well, so you're on the TB12 diet just not by choice. You should start telling people that.
I'm on TB12.
Dude, if you actually led with not, I'm allergic to everything, which makes you sound like a freak, and instead you told people, I'm on TB12, although Tom Brady doesn't want you on TB12 because you don't look like a guy who's on TB12. You know? You might get cease and desist if you start telling people you're on TB12 because all you eat is quinoa and avocados, but that's pretty much what this guy can eat, and obviously
like
a lot of protein.
Veggies.
Yeah, a lot of veggies, a lot of protein. I like how TB12 is just eating really healthy, but yeah, it's like, he's like, I made this. I made less carbs. You go, okay, I said no sugar. You're like, okay, man, sure, it's your thing. Anyways, what's on the list?
Dairy.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Yeah, that stuff.
Bacon, sausage, deli meat, red meat, bread, pasta, cereal, chips, cookies, prepackaged snacks, white sugar, high fructose corn syrup, refined sugars, cakes, pastries, candies, wheat, rye, barley, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, potatoes, beans, lentils, chickpeas, soy products, all sorts of oils, trans fats, more oils, coffee, anything caffeinated, packaged fruit juices, certain fruits, table salt, MSG.
This is too much. There's a couple things on this. I'm like, what, if he eats a tomato, he's going to not be able to throw the football, Tom? Like, that, it's outrageous, some of these things on this list. Anyway, like, yeah, but obviously, like, yeah, chips and cookies are not going to be on TB12 diet, but they're there. Not being able to have any alcohol when you're 22, even if you're the starting quarterback of the Bears, like, yeah, I don't know if I think this makes him weird. This is bad for Caleb. I'm spinning. That's bad. Anyways, follow the podcast. Listen to me later. I'll be on right after the media conference at 11 today. Leafs talk then. Subscribe and review. Follow on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you then.